Hello there, this is the Archaeology News Weekly and I'm David Connolly. Many apologies for the sound of my voice just now, but I have a stinking cold. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All these stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details on each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. And now, the main headlines from around the world are as follows. Iron Age bog bodies are unveiled in Ireland. A Bronze Age ditch is found in Wiltshire. And studies show Jeroft was an ancient trade link centre in modern Iran. Around 5,400 years ago, there is new evidence that Andeans were irrigating crops, and geoscience rediscovers Phoenicia's buried harbours. Considering cave art, it's suggested that men and women did their own thing, and the earliest Mayan writing has been found in a pyramid. While hopes to recreate ancient Bronze Age trade routes are still afloat in Oman. New light has also thrown on the purpose of Stonehenge, and a major Bronze Age tool discovery has been unearthed in Somerset. New light shines on the origin of Chinese civilization, and finally, a new study traces Egyptian Stone Age ancestors. Archaeologists have unveiled two Iron Age bog bodies which were found in the Republic of Ireland. The bodies, which are both male and have been dated to more than 2,000 years ago, probably belonged to the victims of a ritual sacrifice. In common with other bog bodies, they show signs of having been tortured before their deaths. Details of the finds are outlined in a BBC Time Watch documentary to be screened on BBC Two on Friday, January the 20th at 9 p.m. The first body dropped off a peat cutting machine in February 2003 in Clonycavan near Dublin. The forearms, hands and lower abdomen were all missing, believed to have been hacked off by the machine itself. The second was found in May the same year in Crochan, just 25 miles from Clonycavan. Old Crochan Man, as it has become known, was missing a head and lower limbs. It was discovered by workmen clearing a drainage ditch through a peat bog. Although the police were initially called in, an inspection by a state pathologist confirmed that this was an archaeological case. Both bodies were subsequently taken to the National Museum of Ireland in Dublin. After an 18-month investigation by an international team of experts, it has been revealed that the men were killed around 2,300 years ago. The team of experts have been examining the bodies to learn how they lived and died. Carbon testing, for example, shows that Clonycavan Man died between 392 and 201 BCE, and Old Crochan Man from 362 to 175 BCE. One of the experts is Don Brothwell, the York University archaeologist who led the scientific investigation of Lindow Man, the bog body found in Cheshire in 1984. Clonycavan Man was a young male, no more than 5'2" tall, and beneath his hair, which retains its unusual raised style, was a massive wound caused by a heavy cutting object which smashed open his skull. Chemical analysis of the hair showed that Clonycavan Man's diet was rich in vegetables in the months leading up to his death, suggesting that he died in summer. It also revealed that he'd been using a type of Iron Age hair gel, a vegetable plant oil mixed with a resin that had probably come from southwestern France or Spain. Old Crochan Man was also young, probably in his early to mid-20s, but much taller than his counterpart from 25 miles away. Scientists worked out from the length of his arms that he could have stood an estimated 6'6" tall. He had been horrifically tortured, however, before his death, with his nipples cut off and also been stabbed several times in the ribs. A cut in his arm suggested that he'd tried to defend himself during the attack that ended his life. The young man was then later beheaded and then dismembered. Hazel ropes passed through his arms before being buried in a bog. Food remains in his stomach show that Old Crochan Man had eaten milk and cereals shortly before he died. But electron microscopic examination of his fingernails showed that he did no physical labour whatsoever, and chemical analysis of his nails showed that he had more meat in his diet than Clonycavan Man. This suggests that he died in a colder season than Clonycavan Man, when vegetables were more scarce. It may also explain why his remains are better preserved. Perhaps most importantly, an expert at the museum has developed a compelling new theory on late Bronze Age and early Iron Age Irish society that should also help point the way to new archaeological discoveries. The museum's Keeper of Irish Antiquities, Ned Kelly, noted that both bog bodies were discovered along ancient tribal boundaries. Looking back, he found that 40 body discoveries in Irish bogland were made along these boundaries. He extended his search to include other late Bronze Age and early Iron Age material and horse bits, and they turned up along with wooden yokes, weapons, cauldrons, personal adornments, crowns, and even golden collars on these tribal boundaries. The two bog bodies are now at the National Museum of Ireland in Dublin. So far, they've only been seen by archaeologists and scientists, but will go on public display in the museum in May. Archaeologists have unearthed a Bronze Age ditch during major road improvement works in Wiltshire in England. Archaeologist Neil Holbrook said the 3,000-year-old ditch dating back to the Bronze Age has now been recorded. The works are being carried out along the A419 by the Highways Agency to create a flyover designed to cut the congestion. Roy Canham, an archaeologist for Wiltshire County Council, said, "We can now prove that the route of the current A419 has been important for over 2,000 years. Recent studies conducted on seals unearthed at the ancient city of Jeroft in Iran proved that the area was once the most important economic centre of the Iranian plateau. The studies indicate that its residents had extensive trade ties with Afghanistan, Pakistan, Tajikistan, the Persian Gulf region and Transoxiana 5,000 years ago. Yusuf Majidzada added that additional studies have shown the region, especially the ancient city of Kenar Sandal in the Halil Rud region, was a commercial link between all the previously mentioned regions. Each seal bears various patterns as well as commercial trademarks. The seal for each country was different than the other. That is, it indicates which region the businessmen had commercial ties with. The collection includes various seals for each country they had ties with. The inhabitants of ancient Jeroth packaged goods inside earthenware vessels and or jugs, and then covered the lid with mud and affixed the special seals, according to the Iranian archaeologists. Jeroth came into the spotlight nearly 4 years ago when reports of extensive illegal excavations and plundering of priceless historical items of the area by local people surfaced. Since 2002, two excavation seasons have been carried out at Jeroth's site under the supervision of Majidzada, leading to the discovery of a ziggurat made of over 4 million mud bricks, dating back to around 2300 BCE. In the Andean foothills of Peru, not far from the Pacific coast, archaeologists have found what they say is evidence for the earliest known irrigated agriculture in the Americas. An analysis of four derelict canals filled with silt and buried deep under sediments showed that they were used to carry water to fields 5,400 years ago, and in one case possibly as early as 6,700 years ago. Other scholars hailed the discovery as adding a new dimension to understanding the origins of civilization in the Andes. The canals are seen as a long-sought proof that irrigation technology was critical to the development of the earliest Peruvian civilizations, one of the few major cultures in the ancient world to rise independent of outside influence. It was assumed that by 4,000 years ago, perhaps 1,000 years earlier, large-scale irrigation farming was well underway in Peru, as suggested by the indirect evidence of urban ruins of increasing size and architectural distinction. Their growth presumably depended upon irrigation of the arid valleys and hills descending to coastal Peru, but the telling evidence of the canals had always been missing. Then Tom Delahaye, an archaeologist of Vanderbilt University, started searching around the Zana Valley, around 40 miles from the ocean and more than 300 miles north of Lima. On the south side of the Nanchoc River, he and his team uncovered traces of the four canals, narrow and shallow, lined with stones and pebbles, extending from less than a mile to more than 2 miles in length. The canals ran near remains of houses, buried agricultural furrows, stone holes and charred plants, including cotton, wild plum, bean and squash. The initial discovery was made in 1989, but it took years of further investigations, excavations and radiocarbon dating, as well as other analysis, before Dr. Delahaye felt ready to announce the find. The people of the valley understood elementary hydrology and laid out the canals to use gravity to deliver water gently downstream towards the cultivated fields. The exact location of Tyre and Sidon's ancient harbours, Phoenicia's two most important city-states, have attracted scholarly interest and debate for many centuries. New research reveals that the ancient basins lie buried beneath the medieval and modern city centres in southern Lebanon. A network of sediment cores has been sunk into the city's coastal deposits and studied using high-resolution geoscience techniques to elucidate how, where and when Tyre and Sidon's harbours evolved since their Bronze Age foundations. In effect, ancient port basins are rich geological archives replete with information on human impacts, occupation, histories, Holocene coastal evolution and natural catastrophes. After the 6th and 10th centuries AD, tectonic collapse, tidal wave impacts and relative commercial decline meant the harbours were no longer properly maintained, gradually buried beneath thick tracts of coastal sediment and lost until now. Analysis of stenciled handprints found on the walls of an Indonesian cave suggests that prehistoric men and women chose not to mix genders when it came to this enigmatic art form. Experts from France's National Centre for Scientific Research, CNRS, looked at handprints left at the Gao Masri II cave in Indonesia, using a new computer model to determine whether the hand that made the mark was male or female. They found that the male cave dwellers grouped their handprints in given locations and females put their own handprints in their own areas. The discovery supports evidence put forward by ethnologists showing that prehistoric man had different rituals than women. The findings suggest that the female role was far more important than previously thought, and that women in primitive societies may have played the parts of magicians or shamans. The new software is based on research that can calculate the gender of a hand's owner according to the proportionate lengths of the ring and index fingers. These two fingers are of equal length amongst women, but there's a big difference in length amongst men. The two Gao Masri sites, found in limestone rock in the highlands of Borneo in the 1990s by a Franco-Indonesian team, comprise hundreds of hand stencils that are believed to be between 8,000 and 20,000 years old. CNRS archaeologists are looking at other handprints at Peshmerga and Cosquer caves in France and the Cueva de las Manos Pintadas in Argentina and other caves in Indonesia. Archaeologists excavating a pyramid complex in the Guatemalan jungle have uncovered the earliest example of Mayan writing ever found, 10 bold hieroglyphs painted on plaster and stone. Newly discovered hieroglyphs show that the Maya were writing at a complex level 150 years earlier than was previously thought. The glyphs, which date to around 250 BCE, were found on preserved painted walls and plaster fragments in the pyramid structure known as Las Pinturas in San Bartolo, Guatemala. Las Pinturas also yielded the previously oldest samples of Mayan writing dating back to 100 BCE. These new glyphs are much more complex and are described as a fully developed script. This is not to say that the Maya invented writing and not the Zapotec, but it does lead us to question the origins and the complexities of these origins. One thing seems certain, the Mayan style was not influenced by the Zapotec and is in no way similar to their form of writing. A common problem with dating Mayan writing is that it is often on stone, which scientists can't accurately date using radiocarbon methods. Instead, they have to use stylistic changes to date the material. However, the team has found that these writings, in a pyramid made in part with wood, which is carbon-based, can be dated with radiocarbon techniques. Taken together, these samples imply that the text was painted between 300 and 200 BCE, but it's likely that Mayan writing goes back a lot further. Humbled after three attempts at making a vessel modelled on an ancient Bronze Age boat float, the team that conceptualised the Magan boat project, an attempt at recreating the trade route between the Harappan and Magan civilizations, participated in a two-day international seminar on the Magan and Indus Valley civilizations. This seminar, which began on Wednesday, is being jointly organised by the Archaeology Department of MSU and the Archaeological Survey of India. Magan 3, the boat that set sail on September the 7th, 2005 from Tsur in Oman and then sank the same evening, had some, shall we say, design flaws that the team hopes to amend and make the boat sail again as soon as possible. A Magan 4 and a Magan 5 are already in the pipeline. Tom Vosmer, involved in the design of the Magan boats, gave a first-hand account of the project from its conceptualisation to the moment preceding the sinking of the third boat. Overconfidence and some failure to make a perfect design led to the sinking. The structural deficiency caused water to enter the boat through holes near the steering beam. The 40-foot reed and bitumen vessel, Magan III, began sinking hours after it set sail, as heavy winds rocked the craft and water spilled over the sides. Vosmer stressed the authenticity of the boat. They made it from rope created from date palm fibre. They gathered their own reeds and made sails from woven wool, and they even imported the bitumen from Iraq. After they successfully built and then tested two earlier versions of the craft, the Magans 1 and 2, the government of Oman came forward with an offer to fund the construction of a full-sized model, which culminated in the now-lost Magan 3. Well, we could only wish them luck with Magan 4.
Stonehenge, iconic, ancient, mysterious, or perhaps not so mysterious anymore. Since research conducted jointly by the Universities of Sheffield, Manchester, Bournemouth, Bristol and UCL has shed new light on the purpose and function of the monument. The latest research developed out of a trip to Madagascar, said Professor Mike Parker Pearson of Sheffield University. A Madagascar colleague of mine paid a return visit to Stonehenge, took one look and said it was blindingly obvious what it was for. It was built for the ancestors. It was explained that in Madagascar, monuments were built in stone for the ancestors and in organic matter for the living. This presented an interesting hypothesis, that the monuments at Stonehenge were linked to the nearby sites of Durrington Walls and Woodhenge. It put forward the idea that Stonehenge was part of a wider complex linked to the River Avon, which gave us a series of predictions. If they were linked by a ceremonial purpose, there should be an avenue from Durrington Wall site to the river, as there is from Stonehenge, and the two should be contemporary. The research then carried out this year, part of a project that will continue until 2009, has actually borne out these predictions. New radiocarbon evidence indicates that the Durrington Walls henge was in use at the same time as the Sarsen stones were erected at Stonehenge. It used to be thought that Stonehenge was later, but that's just not the case. And this is also in a cleared landscape. We think that there were far fewer trees then than now, so they probably would have had to go as far to get the timber as the stones. It seems that one was built of wood and the one of stone for a reason. As predicted, the team also found an avenue leading from Durrington Walls to the river. It's the earliest road in Europe with a proper flint surface and has been well trampled. Durrington Walls and its annex Woodhenge is about 3 miles from Stonehenge. The evidence has led the team to believe the two sites were used for complementary purposes in the same funerary practice. The idea that Stonehenge's function was something to do with remembering the dead is well established. Stonehenge is full of human remains and cremated bones, and it's in the middle of the densest concentration of burial monuments in the country. But there are very few human remains at Durrington Walls. There's a different material culture in the two places, different pottery styles and so on. But now that we know that the two sites are contemporary, there must be a reason behind that. Archaeologists have uncovered hundreds of Bronze Age tools on a Somerset building site in England. About 800 items, including arrowheads, scrapers and flint blades, were found at the former hunting site. Experts have hailed the discovery from more than 4,000 years ago as one of the most important finds in the Somerset area in recent times. The tools were found by workers at the Silk Mills Bridge construction site near Taunton. The artefacts, which were initially found during construction work in the summer, are now being assessed by archaeologists. Steve Membury, archaeologist for Somerset County Council, said that it appears to be an island in a large river. It was used seasonally, probably for hunting ducks and fish. It's very rare to find hunter-gathering communities like this anywhere else, so this is an important discovery. After artefacts are checked, listed and analysed, they will be sent to the museum in the area, where they will then be able to go on public display. After 5 years of intensive study, researchers engaged in a grand archaeological project have drawn an outline of Chinese society 3,500 to 4,500 years ago, an important period that researchers believe is related to the origins of ancient Chinese civilization. China launched the archaeological project in 2001 to seek the origins of their civilization. Researchers tried to find answers to such questions as to whether Huang Di and Yin Di, two legendary ancestors of the Chinese nation, really existed in history, and whether there was any Chinese characters even older than in the inscriptions on animal bones and tortoise shells discovered in the famous Yin ruins, which date back over 3,000 years. Huang Wei, deputy director of the Institute of Archaeology under the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences, said that the first stage of the project has just concluded, while the second and third stages will last another 10 years. During the past 5 years, archaeologists designated 6 major sites of cultural heritage. The Neolithic Shi Po site in Lingbao County, Wanchanggan site in Dongfeng, Xinji site in Xinmi County, Erle To site in Yanshir County, and Dashir Gu site in Zhengzhou, all in central Henan province, and the Taosu site in Shengfun in neighbouring Shanxi province. The 6 sites were all large-scale towns in prehistoric China and provided material crucial to the study of social structures and the emergence of the early states in the mysterious 1,000 years before the Shang Dynasty, 1600 BCE. Research into the Taosu site shows that the differentiation of social classes in ancient China can be dated back to 2300 BCE, and the notion of state sovereignty also emerged at that time. More than 1,000 tombs have been excavated at the site, and a large number of funerary objects were found in about 10% of the tombs, which researchers believe belonged to those from the very highest social estate. Magnetic prospecting technologies were used to probe relics of the ancient city, covering an area of 3 million square metres. Archaeologists have found remains of a bloody war also, which destroyed the city at Taosu about 4,100 years ago. At the Erle To site in Henan province, archaeologists found the earliest palace complex ever discovered in China. Many Chinese scholars believe that Erle To is the site of the capital of the Xia dynasty, 2100 to 1600 BCE, China's first dynasty. The palace complex has a clear central line as a large structure, and roads are distributed evenly at either side of the line. The design created a model for later dynasties in designing their capitals. Recent archaeological discoveries show that there were many advanced cultures at the valleys of the several major rivers in China around 4 to 5,000 years ago. The civilization in central China, though not the most developed at the beginning, absorbed the cultures in the surrounding areas, forming the origins of Chinese civilization. In the coming 5 years, the research will be expanded from central China to valleys in the Yangtze, Yellow, Liuhu and the Huaihe rivers, covering the period from 4000 BC to 770 BC. More than 1,000 researchers from over 20 branches of learning will be participating in this project. Some 64 centuries ago, a prehistoric people of obscure origins farmed an area along Egypt's Nile River. They produced simple but well-made pottery, jewellery and stone tools, and carefully buried their dead with ritual objects. The items often included doll-like female figurines with exaggerated sexual features, thought to possibly symbolise rebirth. And despite the simplicity of their possessions, a new study suggests these people, the Badarians, may have ultimately given rise to the Egyptian civilization some 14 centuries later. Indeed, the Egyptians seem to have been basically the same people from the end of the Stone Age through late Roman times, the researchers found. In the study, Joe Irish of the University of Alaska Fairbanks analysed similarities among teeth from almost 1,000 people from various eras of Egyptian history and prehistory, and found, he wrote, overall population continuity over this roughly 5,000-year span. Irish noted that while the findings backs up the views that some archaeologists have voiced before, it's partly at odds with some other studies of skeletal remains, so further tests are needed. On the whole, the findings provide a window into a poorly understood question, just who exactly were the ancient Egyptians? The Badarians, and even more so members of a later culture called Nagada, are widely believed to have been cultural contributors to Egyptian civilization, but it hasn't been clear whether they were the same people. Their practice of burying objects with the dead was like that of later Egyptians, though not nearly as elaborate, archaeologists say. Early Badarian vessels are fired to a hardness which approaches that of metal, and they are often eggshell thin. Among the Badarians, metal was known, but tools were still made of stone. The later Nagada culture made wider use of metal, and also, while the Badarians' artistic sense was not highly developed, Nagada culture had more advanced artistic abilities. So, remember, new archaeological and heritage opportunities, as well as the UK Heritage Calendar, Library Section and UK Courses, can be found on Badger. That's www.bajr.org. And more can always be found at Stonepages, news.stonepages.com. So thank you for listening again to Archaeology News Weekly, and I hope you'll return again next week, when I also hope that my cold will be better. Thanks, Len. Goodbye.